seconds. 2 seconds. Riddell all the way outside to Watford. Three on the way. Oh! It went in! It went in! He puts it up on the left hand. No good. Tipped up. And no good again. Batted away. Tipped into Cody. Indiana's going to win it. They win it.
Yogi Ferrell. Will he take the big shot? Bryant is trying to post. It's Yogi. It's three. Got him all!
And welcome, Hoosier fans, to another episode of Podcast on the Brink, your weekly dose of Indiana University basketball news and notes. I am your host, Jared Morris, from the Assembly Call. And I will be joined momentarily, as I always am, by Alex Bozich of Inside the Hall and our special guest this week, Chronic Hoosier, here to recap and analyze a weird and actually pretty disappointing week in Indiana basketball. But first, a quick word from SeatGeek. As you know, buying tickets online for sports and concerts has been a confusing process for a long time. It's always been hard to find the best seat, the best deal for that game or show that you want to go to. And none of those older ticket sites really seem to want to change that. But SeatGeek is different. They've come along and they've created an amazing app and website that makes it easier than ever for fans to buy and sell tickets. That's why SeatGeek is the first place I go to look for tickets to a game or concert, because everything about SeatGeek is designed to make life easier for sports and music fans. The only thing that isn't great is when you want to get a ticket to a home game for your team, but they gave up the home game to play on the road, and so you have to buy a ticket to the road venue. But that would never happen, right? No, surely not. Best of all, Podcast on the Brink listeners get a $20 rebate off of their first SeatGeek purchase. Here's how that works. Download the SeatGeek app, go to the settings tab and click add a promo code, and add the promo code Brink, B-R-I-N-K, and SeatGeek will send you $20 after you've made your first ticket purchase. That's download the SeatGeek app and enter the promo code Brink today. Alrighty. Well, here is my conversation with Alex and Chronic Hoosier. We get into all the news from this week in Indiana basketball. It was a disappointing week. Let's talk about it, and we'd love to hear your comments afterwards. All right, so real quick, I have a bit of bad news. We just got done recording. I went and listened to the recording, and I did not have the proper mic selected. Add that to one more bad decision or whatever. It's just been that kind of week. So on this recording, my audio is not very good. I sound very distant because it's recording off of my computer, but you came to hear Chronic and you came to hear Alex anyway. So they sound good, but my genuine apologies in advance for my audio not sounding good. Please try to just suffer through it because I think the conversation is good. The points are good. And as I said, we want to hear what you think too. So send us tweets at Assembly Call, at Inside the Hall, at Chronic Hoosier, or leave a comment on the episode page. You can find that at podcastonthebrink.com. All right. Here is my discussion with Alex Bozich and Chronic Hoosier.
All right, we are joined on this episode of Podcast on the Brink by Alex Bozich, of course, from Inside the Hall, and the great Chronic Hoosier joining us to try and make sense of what has been kind of a ridiculous 48 hours in the world of Indiana basketball. Chronic, I think I speak on behalf of everybody with this opening question when I say, what the hell is going on?
I wish I could tell you, man. I wish I knew what was going on. I think we've kind of reached a new nadir in the Indiana basketball world where, you know, it's certainly not the sky is falling, sanctions, coaches cheating type thing, but quite the opposite. This is, in a lot of ways, it's self-inflicted. In a lot of ways, this is a really sad self-reflection of where the program views itself. And, you know, as Fred said to Kent Sterling yesterday on the radio, the athletic department and the basketball team don't feel like it's in their best interest to play a home game right now. They don't want the hall to feel sad. And that admission alone is about the saddest thing I've ever heard coming from the Indiana basketball team, coming from the IU athletic department. And I think that's saying something. It's sad thing all around that, you know, they don't have the confidence that Assembly Hall will give them a home court advantage. And I don't even think he feels that it won't be an advantage. I, you know, in Fred's own words, it would be a shadow of its former self. And that implicit in that statement is we're going to totally disregard a proven statistical advantage that Assembly Hall gives the basketball team.
Yeah. I mean, and, you know, the irony of last year winning every home game and that being such a big storyline at the end of the year. And now the storyline at the end of this year is avoiding a home game. I mean, it couldn't be more different, just 1 year removed, which is, I suppose, as good an illustration of the roller coaster nature of this program as we could have, really.
Yeah, and you know, this isn't, I understand, trust me, I understand full well what Bloomington's like over breaks. But you know, we play games over Christmas break every year. And with the exception of this year, generally we have outstanding crowds and we have positive results from the basketball team. So there's a piece of me who kind of feels it was a cop out. You know, I do agree with Fred. You can make arguments on both sides of it, but I still don't understand more than anything how you willingly give up a competitive advantage. And I know they weren't aware of the opponent and the disparate nature of Georgia Tech's home and road performances this season. But to willingly give up a home court advantage it's not a full-on surrender, but you're certainly not doing everything in your efforts to maximize your advantages going into a game. And the fact that they're giving that up is just, it's really telling of not just their confidence in themselves, but I think in the bigger picture, it almost reads as though they're just ready for this thing to be over.
Yeah, that's what I don't understand. I mean, if you're going to accept the NIT invite and you're going to play, why wouldn't you do it with both feet planted firmly in the tournament and taking the home game and giving yourself every opportunity to win? I don't understand why you would put yourself at a disadvantage. I mean, Alex, is there anything that about this that maybe makes more sense to you that we're not talking about? Or are you kind of as flabbergasted with the whole thing and the explanations as we are?
Yeah, it's definitely a hard situation to get a read on. My immediate reaction was when I heard that they weren't going to host was that they wanted to avoid the embarrassment of hosting a game on national TV, which I think it clearly would have been. I do agree somewhat with what Fred said yesterday on Kent Sterling, that it was a lose-lose situation. If they would have accepted the home game and only 3,000 people would have shown up and you had, you know, pictures of the empty seats being tweeted out, you had the images of the empty seats being shown on national television, that would have been an embarrassment for IU as a whole, not only on the coaching staff and maybe the feelings that the fans are showing towards them based on their attendance, but also the athletic department. It wouldn't have been a good look for them. And what the decision that they made to forego the home court advantage, it's also being met with criticism. So, I mean, let's just be honest here and say that there's no, for a program like Indiana, there's no way to sell an NIT appearance. It's never going to be acceptable. It's never going to be embraced, and it's never going to be good enough for the fans. So it is what it is at this point. I mean, the game's going to be played tonight. Indiana is going into what I kind of view as potentially a hornet's nest in Georgia Tech based on the enthusiasm I've seen coming out of there. I mean, you got the coach buying tickets for every student that wants to come. Mm-hmm. It's a smaller arena. It's 8,600 seats. So it's not like they have to have the place full to have a decent atmosphere. And also, you have a team that's pretty good at home. I mean, they beat North Carolina at home. They beat Florida State at home. They beat Notre Dame at home. They beat Syracuse at home. They beat Pitt at home. I mean, these are not – obviously, three of those teams are really good NCAA tournament teams. The other teams are – you know, Syracuse is a one seed in the NIT. So it's really a lose-lose situation for everyone involved, and it's very unfortunate, I think, that it's come to this.
I mean, you make some good points. I want to push back just a little bit because this concept of a lose-lose, I think the one end of it from a losing perspective was much worse, giving up the home game. Like, don't – and obviously, you're right. It's going to be hard to sell an NIT game, and people harken back to the NIT game against Vanderbilt. But even that game, there were, what, you know, 5,500 fans, something like that? And that's still more than almost anybody gets for an NIT game. So, no, if the expectations are we're going to have 10,000, 11,000 people at Assembly Hall – at Simon Scott Assembly Hall for this game. That's not going to happen. But don't you think there's a way? I mean, look at what Georgia Tech did, and maybe Indiana can't do that, but don't you think there's a way you open it up to the community? You know, you could generate some kind of excitement, not NCAA tournament level excitement, but there would have been a way to turn that into a positive if everybody had maybe a dash of humility and realized, hey, this is a bad season, but we still have one final opportunity to go play instead of just hanging your heads and sulking. And that's, I guess, what I don't understand about the whole situation and why, if you're going to play in it, why not try and maximize it instead of, you know, we got one foot in, but we don't really want to. Like, I just feel like that made it much, much worse than it needed to be. Am I?
Yeah. No, I don't disagree with you at all. I'm on board with what you're saying 100%. Trying to look at it from, you know, both sides of what they looked at. Even if you gave people free admission, I mean, how many people are going to show up? I don't know. I mean, everyone was talking yesterday about, well, there's families that don't normally get to see a game that would love to come. I'm sure that's the case. And for those people, I'm disappointed because the Assembly Hall game day experience is awesome. I mean, even if there's only going to be a couple thousand people there, I mean, I've got a 6-year-old son. I mean, he would have loved to go watch the game. I mean, he doesn't care if Indiana is winning or losing. He just likes watching basketball. And I feel like there's probably a lot of families with kids like that and just other people that don't ever get to make the trip. So I think it's unfortunate for them. And I do agree with you that it was an opportunity missed. But I think it kind of shows the overall state of IU basketball, the athletic department, and really searching for answers at this time as to what is going to happen next. And I don't really think there's a clear answer.
Yeah. I mean, chronic.
Well, let's keep in mind, too, if you look at the timeline that Fred was discussing yesterday, this was the decision that had to be made, whether or not they were going to host a game that was made a couple of weeks ago. And it was when IU first started appearing in the NIT bracket projections, we originally appeared in that as a one seed. And I think it was the following week we were down to perhaps a four-ish, but it would have put us, we were projecting somewhere around a top seed at the time this decision was made. So I found that really illustrative too, that surely they were aware of that information and yet they were still willing to punt this thing. And I think part of it is it's a tacit acknowledgement that, look, in this day and age, we kind of live in a troll culture, where if there's anything remotely embarrassing, it's going to be shared and widely disseminated. And a lot of people are going to make sick burns about, you know, how sad the state of Indiana basketball is. That's kind of who we are today as a culture, online at least. That being said, though, when you agree to play in the NIT tournament, you're agreeing that you're a second tier program for that year, at least as far as the tournament situations go. So, you know, I get that you want to get the experience. And I do think that the more games that these guys play, especially for the players who are coming back, the more advantageous it's going to be for the team next season. But let's call a spade here. You have a second-tier team this season. You agreed to play in a second-tier tournament. And you admittedly are hiding from that now, at least hiding it from your home crowd. And that to me is sad. Yes, I was here for 2005, and it was a terribly miserable experience. And I think the parallel, one of the elephants in the room here that nobody's acknowledging, or at least nobody inside the program, and certainly not on the radio shows yesterday, is one of the reasons 2005 was so sad because it was the end of the Mike Davis era. He still had another season following that, but that was really one of the straws that broke the camel's back. The program had fallen so low, and there was a lot of fan dissatisfaction with where things were heading at that point. And while I get that Fred wants to avoid those optics, we have to acknowledge that we're in the exact same situation here. I mean, it seems like we're kind of addressing the symptoms without really acknowledging the disease. The disease is there's a high level of fan dissatisfaction with Indiana basketball at the moment, so much so that the program and the athletic department will acknowledge that and move a home game to Atlanta for fear of embarrassing themselves. There's been no talk from the department right now about what's going to be done to address the problem of Indiana basketball and getting fans back on board with it. Mainly, right now, at least, the coaching situation. And I understand that Fred has historically not addressed anything regarding his coaches until the end of the season, but his silence on it has been deafening so far. This is the time of the year where you hear ADs all over the country either expressing support for their coaches or signaling at least that there's going to be change coming. We haven't even got the lip service this year of, well, we'll have an evaluation coming shortly. And I think for a lot of people, that's only throwing additional fuel on the fire of the dissatisfactions with where things have gone to date.
Chronic. Oh, yeah, go ahead, Alex. You have a thought?
Yeah, I just want to go back to what Chronic said on the, you know, the troll code culture. And he's exactly right, because this whole situation, okay, there's so many different scenarios here that can play out. Okay, if they take the NIT home game and there's empty seats, that's going to be tweeted about, written about, mocked by some IU fans and other fan bases. If they go to Georgia Tech tonight and win, and this is just me in particular. If I tweet the final score and they win tonight, go look at my mentions and see what people are tweeting back at me.
Oh, it'll be and toxic.
It'll be ugly.
Yeah.
If they go to Georgia Tech and lose, then it's going to be, you can't even win in the NIT. So, going back to this whole, the more I think about all the scenarios, there's just really no way to win this. I mean, there really isn't. I mean, imagine if they go on a run and go to Madison Square Garden and play in the NIT championship. Is there going to be any enthusiasm for that from IU fans? Well, there's going to be none.
Here's what I would say. There's going to be some. Like, I think we're so worried about this, the vocal minority of trolls, and you're right, they're there. Heck, I put a rant out on Twitter yesterday because I was so upset about something I read in a Facebook thread. But there's a lot of people who are genuinely disappointed, who feel like the administration kind of turned their back on them because they were ready to support this team in the NIT. And so I just wonder, with this opportunity, why don't we focus on the people who are genuinely still with the team instead of worrying so much about the people who aren't? Because you're not going to change those people's minds. And I guess, so I totally see what you're saying, and it'll be the exact same way tonight, live tweeting during the game. There's going to be tons of toxic stuff. But those are the small minority on Twitter, which is not representative of the fan base at large, I don't think. So I just, you know, to me, this was an opportunity to focus on the other fans. And I don't know, maybe this is the question I was going to ask you, Chronic, you know, totally playing devil's advocate here, is you have a situation like this. You know, Indiana's known for fan support, right? Like when Tom Crean's first 3 years, everybody talked about, man, the Indiana fans, they lifted this program up, kept things afloat. Like, is there any – should this be a soul-searching moment for Indiana fans when you say, holy crap, my team is so afraid of the fan reaction, they won't even play a home game? Like, should there be any, like, maybe we're doing something wrong, or is that searching way too deep for culpability here?
Well, I think part of it is, at least as far as the department and the program's assessment of the cost and the benefits of playing this thing at home, you have to understand, too, there's a difference between an executive-level assessment of it versus kind of just a common fan assessment of it. Negative publicity can be very costly. I mean, we've seen too many examples of those just embarrassing shots, those scenes that just they really kind of encapsulate a broader sense or feeling about a certain thing. And from the executive level, that can be extremely damaging, because even if you go on to win the NIT tournament, or say you make it to Madison Square Garden and you lose in the title game, the one image that's going to be most widely disseminated is going to be 10,000 empty seats in Assembly Hall, right? Like that's going to be the lasting, resonating overall impression. So I understand why you wouldn't want to enable that to happen, because it has such a potential to be, you know, somewhat damaging. The other end of it, though, and I see this side too. You know, I was going to take my kids to this game. It's spring break here in Bloomington. Contrary to popular belief and what some people have said recently, not everybody in Bloomington leaves. They don't. I wish we could, but every year we have commitments that keep us in town this week. So we were really looking forward to that. It's a game that no matter what time it's slotted for, you can take the kids, don't have to worry about getting up for school. One thing that I think was understated here, and I know you guys, well, Alex, I know for sure you've seen this. We've talked about it, talked with about a bunch of the, or with it, about it with a bunch of the other beat writers. those games over break, even when the students are out of town, but not just them, like the traditional season ticket holders, they open up the doors for a flood of folks who don't normally get a chance to come to Assembly Hall because there's such an availability of tickets that prices are usually down, the opponents usually aren't the greatest, so demand is down. And to me, that's always been a really wonderful time. It's a different vibe in the hall overall, but it's like Lawrence County Appreciation Night. You see a lot of folks who've been fans for a lifetime, many of which often have never been into the hall before. And one thing about the NIT is there is a mandated minimum price for it, but as best I can tell, I think it's a $15 ticket minimum. I think Georgia Tech set their ticket prices to the floor, and you can get in the door for $15 a person, which makes that extremely accessible. I mean, that's only slightly more than a ticket to a 3D movie at the theater now. So I do feel bad for the folks that were looking forward to that opportunity that won't get that chance now, because for a lot of them, it's games like this, it's the only chance people are going to get to go in. And I think it was perhaps a miss with the renovations at Assembly Hall. People who have not had a chance to go in there and see all the amazing work they've done on it and the new fan experience. That to me is a little sad. I think if they wanted to get creative, they certainly could have done a lot of things to kind of boost what those projected attendance numbers were going to be.
Take the term national invitation tournament seriously. Send invites to local schools. Like, there, if you get creative and if you actually show some enthusiasm for it, you can get people enthusiastic. That's, you know, I guess that's what frustrates me looking at it. And I don't want to, you know, beat a dead horse here, because I think we've made the point. But,
well, and here's one thing I'll say too. For all the talk about the possible bad optics, keep in mind how this plays on a national stage. Now, there may be a lot of tweets and a lot of pictures coming from fans with inside the gym, but when you look at the way that these games are broadcasted, especially in Assembly Hall, the only crowd shots you're realistically going to see are the court level tickets when they do the wide shot from the center court line. You don't see the middle bowl even. You generally only see the first couple of rows. And then whenever there's a shot from the floor, usually behind the basket, you'll see across the floor. And those, you know, basically the bleacher seats in Assembly Hall are about the only things that are going to be visible in any nationally televised shot. So I think maybe that was overplayed as well as far as the ESPN optics of the game. It wasn't going to look anything like what I think a lot of people fear it would.
I also think the other issue and the other thing that kind of has rung hollow for me listening to the explanations is this idea of not devaluing the hall when almost the entire non-conference schedule devalues the hall. Because, this is an actual tournament game against a decent team. Like, this would have been, you know, given the 19, 20 home games we had this year, this is a game that would have slotted in, you know, roughly right in the middle in terms of, you know, the level of opponent and what's at stake for this game. I don't think in any way this game would have devalued the hall. Now, maybe if this would have been like the worst game and your non-conference schedule was just out of this world and you only played the best in Assembly Hall, but we, for many years now, made a habit of playing many of the worst teams in Assembly Hall. So that explanation just seemed like searching for something that it just isn't true. I mean, even objectively, I mean, you can look at that and say that's not true. So I think some people have had an issue with that explanation, too.
Yeah, sign me up on that list.
Yeah. So,
well, and let's be honest here, too. I think reading between the lines on that, I think Indiana playing an NIT game devalues the hall. I kind of feel more that way.
Maybe.
Yeah, because, again, I tweeted it out yesterday. I was grocery shopping at the time, and I saw that quote, and I was kind of taken aback by it, because if the level of competition is somehow directly related to the value of the hall, or somehow, you know, tarnishes the sanctity of that chapel. Sorry, man. I saw Delaware State in there.
Yeah.
I saw SIU Edwardsville. That Mississippi Valley State, that rings hollow to me.
Yeah. Well, Alex, you're heading up there, or over there, or down there, I guess. You're in Indiana. I'm thinking about it from a Dallas perspective. What are you expecting for this first NIT game?
Well, I was actually talking to my dad about this yesterday. I'm not sure I've ever watched the NIT.
I think so I watched really the final moments of Robert Morris beating Kentucky 1 year, and that was
maybe I watched that. I don't really know what to expect. I mean, there's some experimental rules for this game, so maybe that'll be interesting. I know there's a decent amount of IU alumni in the Atlanta area. I know Zach Osterman's going to get some public subs on his trip, so he's excited about that. But
there will be pictures, I guarantee it.
Other than that, I mean, you know, it's. 6 hour drive for me. I'm gonna hop in the car here in a little bit, make the drive, go to the, check into my hotel, head downtown to the arena. I got my parking pass ready to roll. We'll see. You know, I think there's gonna be a lot of enthusiasm from the Georgia Tech perspective on this, because that's a program that kind of bottomed out. I mean, I think Georgia Tech's more recently been to a Final Four than Indiana. They actually had some pretty decent teams under Paul Hewitt, and then went to, I think, Brian Gregory, and he really bottomed out. And they got Josh Pastner from Memphis, who wasn't looked at as a great hire, but he won ACC Coach of the Year this year. They won 8 games after being picked to finish last in 14th or 15th in the league. They've got the ACC Defensive Player of the Year and an ACC second teamer in this Ben Lammers kid, who's a big guy. So, you know, from a reporting perspective, what I'd much rather be going to the NCAA tournament? Oh, 100 times out of 100. But I think from the a storyline perspective, I think there's going to be some interesting things just to see how Indiana comes out. I mean, a lot of the NIT to me is how badly do you want to play basketball, because you're not really playing for anything substantial. So there's going to be teams that are in this event that don't really care, and I'm going to be looking to see if Indiana's one of them.
Yeah. Chronic, I mean, as you look ahead to this tournament, I'll ask you kind of a final question, thinking big picture here to close after this, but your thoughts just on this game and what you're expecting from the Hoosiers.
I think it's going to be a tough one for them, man. I mean, when you look at this team's output throughout the season, they tend to have struggled against teams that really play tough defense against them, teams that take away space, that make it difficult for them to get the offense going. And at least according to Pomeroy, this is going to be the second best defensive team that we face this year. Only one slot behind Louisville, and we all know how that worked out. And that was in a gym in Indiana. That we saw Louisville up at Bankers Life. And that was not a pretty game to witness. So this one has, in my estimation, the potential to get really ugly. I mean, if these guys don't come out there and play with some level of inspiration, like they have to – they're going to need to come out there wanting to play this game. If there's any inkling that they don't really want to be here, I think this one could get bad fast for us. Georgia Tech's certainly not an offensive power, but defensively they have the potential to give IU a lot of fits. So I don't feel so hot about it. I think that the line on this one is for people who like to play on games like this. Put a little money down. I think it's a very intriguing line at a 3-point favorite right now.
Indiana is a 3-point favorite.
Indiana's a 3-point favorite in a gym where, like Alex said, Georgia Tech's had some pretty big wins there. They've beat UNC. They've beat Notre Dame. Some really good basketball teams at home. So I think this one's going to be tough for Indiana. I think we certainly have a more talented team. I think we certainly have a higher ceiling. Whether or not these guys want to reach for it remains to be seen. Who knows, though? I didn't necessarily expect to see the kind of the resurgence late season that they gave us. So we'll see which team shows up tonight.
Yeah, we will. Well, as a final question for you, Chronic, I mean, just, you know, kind of looking big picture, and obviously, you know, you addressed it earlier. You know, we haven't heard from Fred Glass about what he's going to do with the coach. There's lots of rumors swirling around and all of that, and people still want to speculate on names that could be coaching next year. And we got to just take the next step, you know, and figure out, you know, what's going on with the people who are here right now. So I know it's a bit of an impossible question, but I mean, as you look forward, you know, for the immediate future of Indiana basketball, forget looking medium term or long term. I mean, what do you expect, and what do you think needs to happen next for Indiana? Because where we are right now, it certainly isn't acceptable. How do we get to a point where it's something more closely resembling something acceptable?
I think the first step is acknowledging where we are. And, I thought there was a lot of credence in Greg Doyle's article yesterday. It is very clear. This is the elephant in the room right now with Indiana basketball. You have a coach who's actively looking for another job.
Yep.
I think it's pretty fair to say that Tom Crean doesn't want to be in Indiana anymore, or at least he understands that it's probably his future is probably not very bright at Indiana for much longer. That in of itself should tell you what we need to do next, in my estimation. You have to, and I thought the marriage analogy was rather apropos here. You've got to find something that fits from a relationship standpoint. And this isn't purely about satisfying the fans. I think more than anything, it's something that everyone can support. And from a relationship perspective, Tom Crean wants out of this relationship. I think what's troubling to me is right now the administration has shown no signs that they're willing to go down that path on their own unilaterally. And that's kind of troubling to me. And I see that resonating in a lot of the conversations that in the commentary that's popping up right now is there's not a lot of leadership on IU side as far as that's concerned. They seem very content to sit back and kind of wait for Tom to decide what he wants to do. But at the same time, they're kind of passive aggressively doing nothing on their own side to support him. By not extending Crean, you know, he's now recruiting beyond his contract period, which is definitely not going to help his successes on the recruiting trail. It certainly has to have some sort of an impact on the current roster. These guys committed to play basketball for Tom Crean and his staff. And now they're looking at an uncertain future where they don't know if he's going to be here for their senior day. They don't know if he's going to be here next year, next game. There was a lot of question going into the postseason whether or not he would even be coaching in the NIT tournament. So I think that does a disservice to the fans. I think that does a disservice to the players. I think it does a disservice to the players who are potentially considering, you know, continuing their basketball career and college careers at IU. I think we need resolution one way or another, and I think we need it sooner than later. I think the longer this is allowed to continue, I think the more the frustration is going to grow, and I think it's creating a toxic culture for all around IU, and I think it would probably behoove the university to put an end to that and to find a new direction forward. I think it's important as we head to this that people appreciate what Tom Crean's done, thank him for his service, and let's find some shared values and goals going forward that we can all get behind, because we've been here far too many times in the last 10 years. Where people are fed up with the coach, with the administration, whatever. And that's just not a healthy environment. Nobody wants to grow up in a family that's full of this much infighting. It's not healthy. And I would love to see IU find a more productive, positive path forward that we can all stand behind and enjoy.
Very well said. Follow the man on Twitter, at Chronic Hoosier. Check out Inside the Hall after the game for live coverage. And, of course, we'll be going live on the Assembly Call right after the game with our post-game show.
Hey, real quick, before we jump off here, speaking of supporting, let me throw a shout-out to the women's team who's playing an NIT game at home this week.
Good call.
They were a bubble team. They unfortunately weren't able to make it into the Big Dance for the second year in a row. Would have been just the sixth time overall in program history. But not unlike what Tom Crean inherited, Terry Morin came into a kind of a weird situation after Kurt Miller's dismissal or resignation.
The dogs are excited about the women's team.
They're fired up, man. We're
going.
Anyhow, anybody that's in Bloomington, I would strongly suggest you go check those guys out.
By the way, next week's podcast, we're just going to have Chronic's dogs drinking water and barking for about a half hour. In a lot of ways, that's more entertaining than talking about Iowa basketball right now, given the current situation.
Homelands, I was going to shut the blinds, too. I totally forgot. Now, long story short, go check these girls out. They play a fun version of basketball. They get up and down the floor. They play the game. It's enjoyable hoops, not just women's hoops. It's enjoyable hoops. I think people would enjoy it, and they definitely deserve our support.
No question about it. All right, everybody. Thank you for tuning in to this week's episode, and we will talk to you next week and break down whatever happens between now and then.
Thank you very much for tuning in to this episode of Podcast on the Brink. We always appreciate you being here. And if you like what you hear on Podcast on the Brink, there are a few good ways that you can support the show and help us get the word out to other IU basketball fans. Certainly, if you like this episode, share it with a fellow IU fan, either on Twitter or via email or however you share podcasts with friends. And also, leaving a review on iTunes or wherever you listen to Podcast on the Brink. A rating and a review is always, always extremely helpful, so we appreciate that. And of course, Podcast on the Brink, brought to you by SeatGeek. Use the promo code BRINK, B-R-I-N-K, when you make your first SeatGeek purchase, and they will send you a $20 rebate on that purchase, whether that's purchase of a tickets to an IU basketball game, to a concert, to any other sports or music event. SeatGeek is the place to go. Thanks again for listening. We'll be back next week with another brand new episode of Podcast on the Brink. Go Hoosiers.